It's time!
Listening to Pound for Pound, ringside for all things MMA and boxing on WFUV Sports.
Welcome into Pound for Pound. It's been a little bit since we've been back, but hey, we are all in the studio. Finally, no more Zoom. I am Zach Cordova, joined alongside Mahdi Dembele and Will Jing. We're going to talk a little bit of reactions to UFC 305. Man, that was a hard watch for me, but still a great night of fights. We saw some incredible performances from Carlos Perates, Dan Hooker, and Dricus du Plessis in the main event. But before we get to all of that for this show, how are you guys doing in this first week of school?
I got to tell you, I'm super, like, to be back in studio, it's been so long. You know, after like COVID, you still have the memories of going to class over Zoom, and it's just like you want to put that in the past, or maybe you want to go back to that, right? Turn off the camera and just play video games all day. But glad to be back in the studio talking cage. Will Ching and my boy Zach Cordova back in the studio. I mean, like, Trey on the boards. Shout out to Trey. It's gonna be a good one, boys. It's gonna be a good one.
I forgot what it was like to go to class on Zoom, honestly. Listen, I feel like in college, it's like it's a little different than high school. In high school, I was kind of happy to, like, you know what I'm saying? It's 8 a.m. and I'm like, you know what? I could turn the camera off and just, like, you're in and out of sleep.
Play,
you know
video.
What I'm saying?
Yeah,
and then the teacher's like, yo, hello, Will, you there? And I'm like, I still remember that happened to me one time. It was like the end of first period. I got caught lacking. But I'm doing pretty good. I'm a little bit tired. I went to a party last night, so.
Man, first week. Yeah. Opening the week up strong. Opening up the school year strong.
All the way to Lower East Side. I didn't get back till like 3:30 in the morning. So I didn't fall asleep till about the sun was coming up, you know. So it's been a little bit rough, but I'm happy to be here. And I think I slept okay the few nights before that, so that's saving me right
all
now.
Right.
Opening week shenanigans, always a good time. Always a great time of the year to start up with the new school year, everything going on. Senior year for me, for Mahdi, you too, Will, right?
Yeah.
This is it for us, man.
Don't say it like that. Don't. Let's just have fun. Let's have fun this year.
Let's have a good time. But today's show is going to be a good time. As I mentioned, we're going to be talking our reactions to UFC 305. Then we're going to be talking about the main event from last week, which was the fight night event, Cannoneer versus Brujalio. And finally, we're going to wrap it up with some wrestling. Will Jing, his expertise, finally bringing in a new element to the show. We're going to be talking a little bit about that later. But to start off, I think we got to talk about that first night, the first fight at UFC 305 on that main card, which was Carlos Perates versus Li Jingliang. I mean, the fighting nerds are just taking over the UFC little by little, and I don't want to say it's shocking anymore, but it's just fun to see because these guys go for a finish every single fight they're in, and they're slowly taking over. Mahdi, what do you think about
it? I mean, you said before we got onto on air, you told me that they had a specific name, one that I unfortunately cannot repeat. Anyways, Carlos Perates, devastating KO in like in every sense of the imagination. Li Jingliang, it was a very, very good fight, but I believe he dropped him twice. The first one, it's kind of like, oh my God, you see it coming, you see it coming. And then I forget exactly what he hits him with.
Little left hook,
but the exchange was beautiful. I mean, Carlos Perates is chaos personified. It was a fantastic fight. One of the better fights on this UFC 305 card that really had a lot of, like, we're going to talk about Dan Hooker later. But, like, Carlos Perates, I absolutely love the action that he brought. I mean, like, against the cage, too. It was like the cross right into the hook. It was beautiful. And you just see him go down and down and down. And you see him flex on the crowd. It's just a good overall feeling. It's good junk food. It's good junk food. I'm sorry. Oh, my God.
No, yeah, so that was, like, crazy because, listen, credit to Li Jingliang for taking it that for that long because he took quite a few hard hits after, you know, leading into the first time he got knocked down and then the second one. I mean, but that was brutal. I mean, once Protez was on top of him, it was like, you saw it, it was clip. Like, no matter how long that Li Jinglang was going to try to survive, like, it was coming. He was just taking hit after hit, and it was more about just like, not about can you win, but how long can you take it.
He did push the pace extremely well in that fight. Like, I think he went into a spinning back fist after a kick. Like, he showed incredible heart. Like, he kept going forward. Incredible chin. Because, again, he was taking some cracking shots there. And he was able to just keep going with it. He was throwing everything that he had, yeah. But it was the eventual counterpunch that got to him. But overall, good on both sides.
Jingliang is a guy who's never been knocked out in his UFC career. He's fought some very tough fighters along the way, and no one's been able to crack that chin until Prontis got in there and did it. And this isn't a rare thing for him. Prontis is on a 9-fight knockout streak.
Oh, my God.
Starting before he entered the UFC, now 4 fights in the UFC, including his Contender Series match, all knockouts. None of them have gone to a third round, and he's just putting everyone down in front of him, a really, really exciting addition to this welterweight division that already is stacked with killers. Where does he fit in into all of this? Is it rankings up next, or who would you like to see him face?
I mean, when you talk about the welterweight division, like, there's been so much shift in change. Like, Dreykus Du Plessis is the champion. Like, if you set this...
Ooh, welterweight.
Welterweight.
Bilal, excuse now. Me. Sorry, Bilal. I know you were... Come on, you can't Bilal. Forget that, man. Remember that. The name. You can't forget the
I
name.
I was the one talking about it. Like, excuse me. Bilal Muhammad, which is, like, the same sentiment as Dreykus. Like, if you just talk about the champions that are currently standing, it's like no way can this guy, like... be champ. Like, there's not going to be a universe where at 170 Kamaru Usman will ever lose, but then Leon happens and now Bilal happens. So a guy like Carlos Prates with long arms, long legs, he's a nasty striker. A lot of people were excited to see him put Jing Liang away, because I believe Jing Liang said that he was bringing Chinese martial arts to the world, because martial arts are from China. Some sentiment like that. But I mean, just a win like this where I see him as a guy, especially because I believe he's on the younger 30, maybe 30, 31. You could just throw him right in the into the equation, and he could fight with the best of them. I wouldn't be surprised if he was in a fight with, say, like a, I wouldn't do a Shavkat. Shavkat's too much of a, but maybe like a Kamaru. Like, I think Kamaru's like a pickings type of fighter. Kamaru Usman, one of the best welterweights ever, but given his recent decline, I say that with parentheses, he's a guy that maybe that's a nice fight for Prates. Maybe it's Dana.
Here's a fun one that people have been throwing around. Kevin Holland versus Carlos Prates.
That's good, but Kevin Holland's a guy, like, does he really push the needle? Like, he's a name on your resume, but is he really a name? Because he's so erratic.
I think he's a fun
himself.
Guy. I think he's someone he's you could you put him in there with Prates, you know what you're going to get. We're going to get an exciting matchup between two guys who like to strike and two guys who like to put people out. And we'll see there if Prates is really ready for the spotlight, because a guy like Kevin Holland's been around the divisions, both divisions. He's fought at middleweight and welterweight, and he's fought some of the bigger names. I feel like it's a good test for him to finally break into those rankings and see if this guy's for real.
Do you think, like Colby's still in the division, right? We have Colby, maybe a Gilbert Burns. I know Ian Gary's around.
Yeah.
Like, Sean Brady. Like, those are also guys that I just wanted to throw out there. So, I mean...
I feel like if anything, now is the time for Prates to kind of like push the envelope and keep moving his way up the rankings. Because, I mean, he's not the youngest guy anymore, right? He's 31 years old.
31.
He has time.
Yeah.
But it's like now, if there's a time, right? You don't want to kind of buy your time and then you start getting up there in age and competing with the younger guys. I feel like now is when you make that big push.
Yeah.
And Mahdi says it all the time, and riding this knockout streak now into this fight and on past this fight. It's not who you beat, it's how you beat them. And you look how he's beating people.
Yeah.
Just the way he beat Li Jingliang, no one's knocked the guy out before he puts him out cold. I don't think he got up for 5 minutes after the knockout. Like, this guy is really good, and he hits very hard.
Very
and,
hard.
I mean, just the whole allure of the fighting nerds now in the UFC. 4 of the men's fighters that are in the UFC from that gym, all undefeated in their time in the UFC. I think as a gym, riding a 61 or 62 fight win streak combined, which is... absurd. So I feel like you got to start giving these guys their shots. We just saw Bohio, who we're going to talk about later, get his shot last week against a top contender, and now is broken into the top 5 of the middleweight division. Prates, one division down, looks like he's ready to break through as well.
Can I actually give you the name that I think is actually perfect? Because this is also MVP, I'll say. Michael Page,
yeah,
I think
I like
is
that
perfect.
One too.
Because he's a guy that the UFC also wants to shove in our faces. He's a guy who should have been in the UFC years ago. Mm-hmm. You saw what he did to Cyborg Santos. But like Venom has that karate style, that in and out attack, like that frustrates you. And Styles makes fights, and Protas fights on the front foot. He's a nasty striker. So just stylistically, with two guys who have like champion and star aspirations, like put them in the cage and see who comes out as the next big thing. I think that's the actual perfect fight.
I like that one. But we're gonna move on and talk about Falling Stars, which unfortunately is Tai Tuivasa drops. Another tough one against Jorginho Rosenstrike. Loses a decision, except one of the refs saw it another way. Scores the fight 30-27 to Tai Tuivasa. One of the weirdest things I think I've ever seen in terms of judging, because everybody was just speechless, nothing to say. He got completely outstruck in every way. I don't think he really landed anything of any significance throughout the fight that really hurt Rosenstrike or anything. He just looked like he was outmatched. And somehow one of the refs saw 30-27. He was dismissed for the rest of the night. He was supposed to judge the Urseg and Cara France fight.
Yeah.
And they dismissed him for the rest of the night because they're like, what's going on? But besides that, obviously Tai didn't win this fight, even if one judge saw it. So what do you think, Mario? What is next for Tai Tuivasa?
I could hear it in your voice. I'm kind of convinced that you were that third ref. You were just like, ah, let me just give it to my boy Tai. I mean, Bam Bam Tai. I mean, like, who doesn't love Tai Tuivasa? Like 14 wins by knockout. I mean, like, he's just everything. Like, he's an everyman in that sense. Yeah. Like, you just seem to relate to him. And he's a UFC superstar, but it's a fall from grace. 12 first-round finishes in his career, 14 wins by knockout, but the accuracy is just not there.
The knockout streak was magical, too, when it was going on. I remember, especially when it was headlined by the knockout over Derek Lewis, everyone that everyone was excited about. And it's crazy to think about. We were so close to, because Gon goes on to take on Jon Jones in heavyweight. A couple months before that, we saw Tai Tuivasa fight Ciryl Gane and actually knock him down.
Excuse me.
Just to think how close we were to seeing Tai Tuivasa versus Jon Jones. And that was unreal to me.
That was the absolute height. That was the absolute height of it, because he had beat Lewis before that, gave Gane a run from his money, and then that's all Pavlovich. That's Volkov. That's Tybura. And now it's Rosenstrike. I did pick Rosenstrike to win this because I thought he was just a bit of a cleaner boxer, and he is. I just wasn't convinced of the chin of Tai Tuivasa, because he's been taking some beatings from the aforementioned guys I just named. But I'll give him a B+, because I did think he was gonna go to the mat in the first. Mm-hmm. Like he surpassed my expectations to a point where it's like,
it's like a moral victory because he made it to the end.
He could stick around, maybe. That's where I am at with Tai Tuivasa. Like, just keep him in your pocket, keep him in mind. But as of right now, it's not looking good for him.
UFC, unfortunately, and just kind of maybe a gatekeeper for a little, as long as his UFC career goes from here, because what is that now, four or five straight losses?
Four.
I just feel like the UFC can't get rid of him because of the star power that Tai brings to the octagon and how much people love him.
So you keep him, like, with upside. Like, maybe it's in it, because in fighting, the last thing to go in fighting is your power.
Yeah.
And that's what Bam Bam made his, that's where he made his money. So that's always going to be there. But unless he gets a guy where it's like a trap series, because where do you rank him in the division, Zach, if you had to give it a number? Like, he needs somebody, like, certainly worse than him to, like, build him back up, and it's a journey back. So depending on where he is in the division realistically, when we think of heavyweight, because I'm thinking Curtis Blaydes, Jon Jones is always around, Tom Aspinall, those are the top dogs, but he needs somebody that's on a platter for him, then he could go.
I've almost felt like heavyweight's always been a top five is all killers. After that,
it's
you start to see guys who are super one-dimensional, guys who just know how to hit hard and don't know really any other aspect of MMA. That's why heavyweight's always talked about as being like a different sport because of the power. Because when you have guys weighing 265 pounds, it's not about technique or how fast you are or how good you are at grappling.
Exactly.
Well, can he land one big overhand that doesn't even need to land cleanly to put the other guy out? That's how I see kind of that back end of that division. Anything below, I think, past the seventh rank is kind of how I see that division. Because once you get up to the top, like you mentioned before, you got Blaydes, you got Aspinall, you got all these guys who could do everything at heavyweight, the new era of heavyweight, if you want to say. And Tai Tuivasa is just kind of one of those guys who can throw down and have a fun fight, and the fans love. So, I mean, it's hard to say who's next for him or what's next for him. I just know that he's just kind of sat now in that realm of bottom of the rankings heavyweights that, hey, go out there and get a knockout every now and then.
I hate that.
I hate it too, but.
But Rozenstruik, he landed a lot of his strikes in this fight. I mean, I think I think it was a well-deserved win. I think he did really well. Yeah. I don't think it's it's any knock on Ty, but it's just
it's just
the way the ball rolled.
It's exactly, and it's because Rozenstruik coming in isn't a very accomplished kickboxer. Last time in our episode, we talked about Rozenstruik and all of the accomplishments in kickboxing. He's a really good striker.
Really good striker.
We haven't seen a ton of it in the UFC where he's proven his dominance at it.
Yeah.
And even in the press conferences leading up to it, Ty's talking about, oh, we're going to throw down. And Rozenstruik's like, yeah, I'll throw down, but I'm going to pick my shots.
I know
how to pick my shots, and I will. And that's exactly what he did. He picked his shots against Ty Tuivasa. He stayed safe, didn't join him in a brawl like Ty might have wanted. And he ended up winning a very smart decision.
Which is, like, just to that, like, that press conference, it's like, Ty, you need a career renaissance. You need to change. Like, I know, like, what, Nascimento, like, Romanov, I know, is right there, Alexander Romanov. Like, do you think maybe another Derek Lewis fight? Because I do want to see Ty back somewhere near the top. It's tied to Tuivasa. I don't know. I'm just trying to fix my brain to a guy where it's a trap, but that's a good name to have. I'm thinking maybe another fight with Derek Lewis.
I almost want to say that's kind of what we're trending to at this point with both of those guys, because Derek Lewis has his streaks and then a skid, and then we don't know. He's all over the place too, because it's just, well, can he land first is Derek Lewis. Can he land first? Let's see. If he gets taken down, we get the opposite effect. We get a five rounds of, or like what Almeida did to him, laid on him for five rounds.
God. He's another story. We watched Lewis
gas out by the second round. Like, that's heavyweight. But I think that's what we're trending to at this point. But moving on from that, as sad as we are about Ty Tuivasa, the next fight brought fire. It woke that arena up. Dan Hooker versus Mateus Gamrot. Man, we were going into this. I think we both picked Dan Hooker as like a plus 350 dog, which is crazy. But Dan Hooker is back in the top five after defeating Mateus Gamrot in a split decision. Close one. But do you think the decision's right?
Did you see Minty's tweet, first of all? I still say tweet. Guys, I just got onto Twitter. I'm an old man.
I would say the same thing.
Yeah, like, you have to. It's still
tweet.
Twitter. Twitter. It's my house
always
is still Twitter.
Twitter.
Like,
I'm not calling it X. Come on, guys.
I'm not calling it. I refuse to call it X. Like, that's never going to happen.
Nah, you did a class yesterday.
Did I? I called it X?
Yes, you did.
Class yesterday? Oh, my God. So I'm old and I'm a kid. Okay, so I'll work on it for you guys. But Minty tweeted. She was like, Hangman, I absolutely love you. And I got to second that. Dan Hooker, did you see him in his huddle? He was like, I love this. I love this.
Yeah.
Like, he's just
he's insane.
He is a monster. Like, the Hangman, he's always a guy that, not one of the, I wouldn't even want to call him a gatekeeper, just a gatekeeper plus.
Yeah.
Like a guy who's not a champion, but, like, you see it in him, and it's always someone who lingers near the top. He's at the top. Dan Hooker is everything. Like, the combination that he threw, like, to put Mateus Gamrot, who's, like, this solid-bodied, like, tank machine. Like, Dan Hooker is just, like, he's crazy.
He's
like,
relentless.
Like,
he's relentless.
Relentless, pushes pace exceptionally well. Like, Israel Adesanya was talking about it. He loves that guy because he's insane. And sometimes, not sometimes, it's fighting sports. You have to be a certain level of crazy to reach the top. And Dan Hooker is near that point. Like, I don't even know what else to say about him. He's just perfect. It, like, the left hook of death. Like, he's just, I love you, Dan Hooker. You're everything we want to see in a fighter.
I was surprised by the fact that Dan Hooker won.
Yeah,
I think a lot of people were.
Win this. I mean, I think Gamrot, I mean, he had the better record coming in. And also, I think he landed a lot of his strikes and he did really well during the fight. But it was close. So I'm not saying that Hooker didn't deserve it or anything, but I don't know. It's close. I don't know if I would have picked that, but, you know, happened.
A lot
it's
of people were going,
decision.
That's a, what, I forgot what you picked.
Judges' decisions are final.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And I think when you look at the fight, I think you can give Dan Hooker a round one because of the way he rocks Gamrot and knocks him down.
Shot.
I think that's what the judges look at in that round. Say, hey, here's the damage. This is what Dan Hooker did. Yes, Gamrot had his moments too. He also rocked Dan Hooker at one point. But Dan Hooker seemed more significant. He landed more volume that round. So you give him a round one. The following rounds, I think the visual of Gamrot just kind of being lackluster in the striking, getting outstruck, and then Gamro diving for the feet constantly and missing, trying to get a takedown just desperately and not able to do it, I think is a bad visual for the judges because it shows desperation because he was getting outstruck. And the fact that he couldn't even get to his takedown, which is what he's good at, couldn't really hold Dan Hooker down, you can't really give him anything off of that because when he did take him down, he doesn't really score off of it. He's not landing damage. He's not threatening subs. He's just, Dan Hooker's just getting through it and getting up and taking the fight back to the feet and pushing forward and just throwing everything in the kitchen sink at Gamro. And honestly, I think out of that, you look at damage. You got to favor damage at that point if Gamro's taking him down and not doing anything with it. And that's what Dan Hooker did.
Can I ask you a question? Because I think this is the one knock that I have to say about a guy like him. Crazy personified. Like literally, like he just, there's a word for it. I mean, like dispatched. Yes, he dispatched of Gamro. Gamro didn't look like he belonged in the cage with him. Didn't do anything with his takedowns. But against the big fish in the pond, because he has wins over Jalen Turner. Mm-hmm. He has wins over guys like Puelles. But a guy like who's just like him, like Arnold Allen. We talk about Arnold Allen, how he fights on the front foot, just a big, strong, and he's going to put it on your chin. He comes up short, right? I mean, Islam, everybody comes up short against Islam. So where do you see him? Is he deadlocked in a certain way? Like, where does he go from, like, what's his ceiling exactly?
A Dan Hooker?
Yeah.
See, after the fight, he goes, I want everybody. I want McGregor. I want Oliveira. Everyone. He could kind of do whatever he wants. Maybe not whatever he wants, but there are plenty of fun fights in that top five of that lightweight division for him. Main thing I want to see, and I think the entire MMA community is asking for it at this point.
Charles.
No, Dan Hooker versus Justin Gaethje.
That's nice. That goes.
two guys, love violence, who are basically violence personified in the sport. I mean, who wouldn't want to see them go head-to-head?
That's fantastic. I'm thinking Michael Chandler, too.
Chandler would be another one. If Chandler could ever fight McGregor or get over it, who knows?
Get over it. And which would actually be an interesting segue because you need to get off of that. Just like in boxing, Benavidez, Canelo didn't want to fight him. Just get on, go to Bubu Andre, go to... So that would also work for Michael Chandler. But Gaethje, that's a good fight. Gaethje's ranked number 3, I think, in that division. Poirier. I love Poirier. Like, I'm still...
Even a Poirier rematch would be interesting. Interesting, because Dustin Poirier says he's not coming back for just anything. He wants a real fight. Dan Hooker were to ever make a plea, make a case for a Dustin Poirier fight at this point in his career, that's how you get that rematch back.
That'll do.
But
yeah, that works.
Moving on, we're going to talk about now. Kaikara France knocks out Steve Ursig in the first round. Steve Ursig obviously coming off of that loss for the belt against Pantoja, put on a great fight, I thought, against Pantoja. Probably one of the better fights I think that anybody's given Pantoja in a little while. And Kaikara France just comes and basically steamrolls him, just lands the perfect overhand, puts him down the first time Ursig retreats, and then Kaikara France gets him up the cage and is able to land some nasty follow-up shots. So maybe a little bit of championship hangover for Steve Ursig. I'm not sure. What'd you see in this one, Will?
I mean, the fight was expected to be a lot closer than I think it was, and I don't know. Sometimes it just happens in a fight. Like, it's not every time that, whether it's UFC or whether you're looking at two guys going at it on the street, like, sometimes it takes one good shot, and boom, that's it. It could be freaking Mahdi fighting Brock Lesnar.
Oh, no.
Mahdi lands that one good shot.
Tell my mom I love her.
I mean, that's true. That's why we love it. That's why we love fighting. It's that one shot. It's that one chance. Hey, Kaikara France is a guy who packs plenty of power. He just lands once. We see the effects. And Steve Ursig, a very, very skilled opponent, like I said, proved himself in that championship fight against Pantoja. And Ursig, or Kaikara France, is able to just drop him easy because he just landed right,
coming off a two fight losing streak and the absence, because he was supposed to fight Manel Cape. I forget on which card was it. It was the Izzy Sean fight. He was supposed to take that card, and then and then Manel Cape goes on his whole tangent about how he's scared to fight him. But I mean, Kaikara France, yeah, packs a punch like little firecracker. Steve Ursig kept dropping his hands, which was something like I didn't like his defensive strategy, especially protecting the head area, because you know guys like Kai are headhunters. They're gonna come to put you on the canvas. Steve Ursig, and this is something I've said a million times before, I think, because UFC, their main job, or at what we would like to think Dana does, is identify stars. But Dana loves John Jones and Conor McGregor to death, and 50 years from now, he'll swear that they're number one pound for pound. But the UFC's job is to identify new stars. I think they missed on Steve Ursek.
Yeah.
Like, I've been up and down with him. Maybe I've been on the rocker. I've been off. I didn't see why he got a fight with Alexander Pantoja. Big shot. He had the big shot. I forget against who. It was a super huge knockout. Like, it currently escapes my memory, but it was...
Over Schnell.
Matt Schnell.
Yeah.
Wow. Like, the whole sports world stopped and look at what he did to Matt Schnell. But then you throw him against Alexander Pantoja, the best in the division. Like, the best in the division, you think, no, that's not what's going to happen.
He had a really quick jump, and I feel like it's because of
Skip
that.
Skip the line.
That flyweight division, I mean... It's hard to say there even is a line at flyweight right now, just because feels like there's a lack of contenders there.
Brandon Moreno.
But Brandon Moreno lost to Pantoja.
Roy Val
lost to Pantoja.
They did it. Well, okay, so let's say this. It's Pantoja and then everybody else.
Exactly.
But if you think that...
It almost feels like they're just trying to give something fresh. They're trying to see who can really who can crack it.
The 11th? Like, he was out of the top 10. You think that guy's going to do it?
And no, I fully agree, because I remember when the fight was first announced, everyone was like, who is this guy? Does this guy even know he's fighting for the title next?
There was a Nicolau in that division. There was an Alex Perez. There was a Tyra who we talked about early, Tatsuya Tyra. Yeah. Like Tim Elliott. Like, there's guys there. The 11th guy, one knockout over a Matt Schnell, who's ranked currently number 11. But I just thought it was too big of a jump for him. And he showed out. And maybe that's because he was playing with house money, because everybody kept doubting him. Mm-hmm. But now that he was he the favorite in this fight?
No.
He was not the favorite in this fight.
Oh, wait. I can't remember. I think he may have been a slight favorite.
Slight favorite. So you see, okay, so he was a slight favorite, and now you get what you have. I don't think he can rise to the moment.
Yeah, but I also don't think he's too far away after a loss like that. Because you look at Kai Kara France, who's coming off of two losses now in a row. One to Brandon Moreno, obviously a former champ.
Okay.
I think that was the interim title at the time. Loses to Brandon Moreno, loses his next fight, and now he gets this knockout. And all of a sudden, Kara France is being talked about as the guy who's getting the next title shot.
Yeah.
So I don't think in this flyweight division especially, you can necessarily fall too far away after a loss. Because if anything, Ursic proved in that fight against Pantoja that he belongs at the top of the division.
Sure.
A lot of people haven't given Pantoja a run like that in a long time. And I think, if anything, he's proven he's in the top five. Yes, he loses this fight to Kara France in a pretty devastating way. But who's to say he can't come out and knock out his next opponent or put on another great performance? Because in flyweight, it just kind of feels like you're one performance away at all times if you're in that top five of the division.
Okay. It has to be seen. Sure. Go Steve. Go Steve.
Come back, Steve.
Go Steve.
But Kara France,
good
what
for
do you
him.
Think for next for him? Do you think the title shot is next for him?
Because Kai's number four, so Albazi, I think the next guy up, that's probably what's going to be. Albazi, is he on the win streak? I know he's coming off of a win. Oh, his last win was against Kai Kara France.
Yeah.
So we can't run that immediately back. Maybe we can, but maybe a Moreno, a Roy Val, the two and the one in that division, both Brandons, excuse me, there. Moreno's coming off of a loss to Roy Val, so I think Kai Kara France could kind of be the mediator between the two. Mm-hmm. I would love to see that fight. I'd absolutely love to see a fight with any one of those two. Mm-hmm. I think that works.
I agree. Well, anything else?
No, you guys basically covered.
Because we're gonna get to main event time, and I'm
you're gonna
kinda
go off?
Dreading this one, man. No, I'm not going off. Man.
Why?
You said you listen to Zach talk about Izzy for 5 hours.
I can't go off on it, man. I feel bad about it. But getting to the main event, Dragos Du Plessis defends his middleweight championship against the returning Israel Adesanya, gets him out of there with a round four submission. And it just felt like this fight, it was a good fight for one.
Yes.
I don't think Izzy looks like he's regressed in any way.
How did we get here?
But man, how have we gotten here? We were talking about earlier, if you look at this lineup of champs a year ago, you would think I was lying to you.
Yeah.
Bilal Muhammad, Dragos Du Plessis. Who else can I name?
Even Sean.
Even Sean O'Malley now as a champion.
Paddy Pimblett.
Paddy Pimblett's on the rise.
He's going to be 155. It's going to happen some way. Just let it happen.
Who would have thought that this would have happened today? Like, who would have thought we would have had all these guys as champion? Dragos Du Plessis, a guy who his fighting style was not pretty. I think that's the nice way
to say
it. He's
the worst fundamental fighter that you've ever seen in the UFC.
He's one of them. But you can't say that because it works. And it's
but it's not planned. I'm not giving him credit. No, it's not planned. That's not fit.
The style isn't pretty. I think that's the nice way to put it. It's not pretty, but it works. I've seen him described as an unkillable goof, I feel like, is like a good way to describe it.
He's like a brick. Like, it's like he's as thick as a brick, and I say that endearingly. He's as thick as a brick. He's as dumb as a brick. I also say that endearingly. It's like, what do you do with Drake? Like, I want to say it's like a method to his madness. Like, yeah, he's just a weirdo, but it's controlled. Like, he knows what he's doing. I've seen a lot of boxers like that, but he doesn't know what he's like. It's like,
but it works.
See the video of him throwing a punch with his eyes closed, and guy had already like parried and moved out the way, and it was nothing but wind?
Yeah.
Like, what even is that?
Just, it's like, swinging wildly, but that's what works for him. And that's, I think, where Adesanya in this fight got lazy, because he's exiting the pocket with his hands down.
Yeah.
Especially later in the round. He's definitely getting tired by round four, and every time he exits the pocket, his hands drop, and he slightly moves his head out of the way a little bit, gets slower and slower and slower, and Drake is just winging punches. He doesn't really care where Izzy is or where he's moving to or anything.
He's just winging
at him.
Yeah.
And eventually one lands, and before Drake takes him down and subs him, he lands one right near the ear of Adesanya, and while he may have tried to play it off, and he played it off well, he was rocked. He hurt him with that shot, because as soon as he goes to take down Izzy, there's not really any resistance because it seems like he's off balance. He points at the ground trying to say, "Hey, I slipped." Da 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 da. No,
big
strong
boy.
He was hurt by it. Yeah. He was hurt by it. He played it off well, but Drake has eventually landed. And I think it was because Israel Adesanya has the tendency to get comfortable in these fights, in these championship fights, especially. I think against Strickland, he got comfortable, and Strickland throws a straight punch and lands first, drops him. This fight, he gets comfortable with the striking because Drake is just throwing wildly and couldn't really land anything significant. Hey, maybe he's not going to hit me. I'm going to just duck out of here with my hands down because I'm comfortable. And I think that's what happened, is Izzy gets comfortable and all of a sudden Drake is lands.
Do you think he's, because this is not exactly what you're saying, but I just wanted your perspective. Do you think he's lost the fire? Because we were talking about contender Izzy's going to be so much fun. You convinced me of that. I said I didn't want to see. He's older. But you told me, but you reminded me of that first magical run to the top. So I was like, maybe he has it in him. But do you think he's lost the fire for it?
I don't think he's lost the fire. I just think Drake's Du Plessis is a bad matchup in specific form, because I don't think Izzy has that one-shot power to hurt Du Plessis.
Body's real question is he not prepared to die anymore?
No, but my thing
I think that's fair. I think that's a fair question to ask, because that's who Israel Adesanya was
that's
in the prime of his career.
Wow, that's excellent.
That's a great callback, because that's who Izzy was in the beginning of his career. He was that guy who was across the cage, looking Kelvin Gastelum in the eyes, telling him, "You can't beat me. I'm prepared to die."
That was Kelvin Gastelum. All fairness to Kelvin Gastelum, amazing gatekeeper. He'll give you a fight. But, like, you say Drake is a bad matchup for him. Is Sean also a bad matchup for him? Because that's another guy that beat him.
I don't know if you can say bad matchups.
Like,
it's
how
just,
many bad ma- like
maybe,
how many-
maybe I put it wrong in terms of bad matchups. It's guys that, especially striking-wise, can kind of get, especially Sean Strickland.
Yeah,
got Izzy in a fight. He had a perfect fight against Izzy. Yeah. He blocked everything, and it was a guy who was perfectly suited, I feel like, to counter Izzy Stroud. That one, I would say, it was a matchup because of Strickland's kind of weird, unorthodox. And it seems like it's these unorthodox guys who kind of just don't really have a method to their madness. Just kind of go in there, and they're unorthodox. They have their style. You don't really see it anywhere else. Those are the guys who give Izzy problems. Mm-hmm. Sean Strickland, very, very unorthodox. We never see the Philly shell in MMA.
No.
Drake's Du Plessis. I don't even know what you can call this style.
I don't know. I don't know what you call that.
Just, like, sprint and punch.
It's also
but
that he got tired, though, like you said.
He gets tired, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think the Izzy doesn't have the one-shot power to hurt a Drake's Du Plessis. I think he was landing plenty in this fight. The combinations were landing. We're starting to see him pick it up more and more. He was landing a lot to the body, heavily to the body over Du Plessis. But no matter what, Du Plessis had that mentality of, I'm going forward, and I'm going to get to you. When I get to you, I'm going to throw. It doesn't matter what you hit me with, I'm going to go through it, and I'm going to hit you. And that's what Du Plessis did, and he got to Izzy, took him down, implemented his game, and finished it.
I know it's in there, because he beat Pereira the second time with what you informed me was an MCL. But it's like I said, if you're going to want to beat, like, a bigger guy, you got to catch him, Izzy. It has to be like a supernova. What you did to Alex, I didn't think you would need it for a guy like Drakus, because I didn't think Drakus was that good. But you're going to need it for a guy like Drake because you got to catch him.
I was thinking that before the fight came in, I thought it was the blitzes that, Duplessis does that would get him in trouble because he tends to sprint in, throwing punches without defending himself, just winging punches. And I thought that would be the perfect time for Izzy to counter him.
But it works.
But it didn't. He didn't do it. Didn't once get him. In any of those moments did he catch him on the blitz. And I feel like maybe that forward pressure really does get to him. Maybe he hits that hard that where people don't want to be in the way of him. Mm. I don't know. I don't fully understand how Izzy wasn't able to counter that. But it's worked against everyone else as well.
Yeah. Israel. Where does he... Because middleweight, we talk about middleweight as well. It's like a weird division. Like, it used to be a tale of two cities. Like, when Izzy was at the top, we had constant challengers like a Sean and then a Drakus. And then you had, like, the other side where it was, like, Costa and Vettori and Cannoneer.
Well, here's the thing. And I want to – just sorry to cut you off, please. There was that time where Izzy was on top of the division and beating everybody.
Yeah.
And Izzy was basically lapping the division at that point.
They caught up.
And that's the thing. They eventually caught up. We eventually got new contenders. We got guys like Drakus Duplessis who came in. We got Sean Strickland rising through the ranks. We now have Kyle Bohio waiting right now at number 5. The division's caught up, and everybody is a lot better. It almost feels like, and I mentioned this to you earlier, you can't just be a kickboxer with good takedown defense anymore in the UFC to be at the top. You have to be well-rounded. You have to be able to grapple. You have to have a very strong ground game, the ability to take guys down and keep it there if you need to, but also the ability to keep it standing and be powerful, especially once you get to the heavier divisions. And maybe that time of just the kickboxer with good takedown defense is slowly going past us because it seems like more and more we're starting to see these guys lose.
But a guy like that, he can learn. Like, learning how to grapple is like, it's a tough thing because there's so much physicality that goes into it. It's the way you split your feet against the fence so a guy doesn't pick you up and slam you. It's hand positioning. It's so many different things. But a guy like Izzy, who's enigmatic in his own way, like very smart, very fluid at the top of his game. He's just an artist in the cage is what I would describe him. And he's a technician. Like, he can learn those things. I think it's... He was never a guy to beat you by being a pure athlete, but he's just a guy who I believe through hard work and through his fighting brain can get better and better as he gets older. I just need to see that because I'm Evolve is there. Like, I believe he's I think he's ranked ahead of Barallo.
Number four.
You see, he's there, and then you have Barallo, and then. And Sean's still around. Robbie Whitaker's still around. Let's see what happens.
And then
Whitaker,
Chimaev. Now this, if Chimaev shows up,
if he shows up, Shavkat. Like,
so to follow that up, Shavkat. What? I mean, just to quickly, I guess summarize or put this all together here. What's next for Drakus Duplessis first, the champion?
What do you do with it?
Obviously, I guess it's hard to ask because, or I guess you can't really ask it because the UFC's already said Strickland. Strickland's next. The rematch.
If not Strickland, then the winner of the Robbie Whitaker and Shavkat fight.
Mm-hmm.
Or if he wants to move up and let Alex murder him, that would be fine. Or if Alex...
But I feel like it's too early for that. It's one defense.
But you're
a lot of people don't think he beat Strickland. I think he's got to defend. I think if he can defend against Strickland, maybe get one more. Because I feel like the double champ status has become a thing that shouldn't be that easy to obtain.
Yeah,
not everybody should be able to do it. I think you got to defend your belt and prove that you're really dominant enough to go up and get a second belt because that's something that should be rare. Shouldn't be just, you defend your belt once, up to 205, let's go get you a second belt. You showed us once. Like, no, you got to defend that belt. And a lot of guys in the past, that's how they got their shot at a second belt.
Yeah, that's
you got to go and you got to make your rounds. You got to defend when there are, and that's what I'm saying. There's not a lack of contenders at middleweight right now. He has plenty to worry about still. Yes, he beat Whitaker. If Chimaev is able to beat Whitaker, he's got to defend against Chimaev.
Yeah.
He's got to beat Strickland again, quote unquote.
And
the new
guys,
he's got to beat Bohio. I think if he can do that, I think if he could beat a Chimaev, or he could win this fight against Strickland and beat a Chimaev or Bohio up next,
then he can get Nusruddin.
I don't see him as a threat to the top. I'm not going to lie to you, man. Okay. But I'm going to say if he can get those two wins, those two defenses, then you could justify him moving up.
Who also has a win over Cannoneer? Oh, Jared, damn. It's it hurts so bad. So bad. He has a fight against... Oh, it hurts. It hurts.
It's just, I mean...
Cannon Man.
Tough fight night. But moving on to the Cannon Man, actually, we're going to just quickly go over Kyle Bohio versus Jared Cannoneer last weekend. The talked about in the post-fight speech. He wants to be the new face of middleweight, and that's how you get it done. You do. You have a great performance against one of the toughest. I don't want to say gatekeeper, but Jared Cannonier
has become kind of a gatekeeper now. He is the quintessential gatekeeper.
But he did it. He goes out there. I mean, the jab looked beautiful. Every time he throws it, he lands. And Kyle Bahio, again, mentioning the fighting nerds, they're here to stay in the UFC, and they're making their claim now at the top. And Kyle Bahio is just as well-rounded as they come.
Yeah.
An incredible ground game, plenty of submissions to his name, and then goes into this fight with the mentality of, I'm not going to shoot. I'm going to keep it standing the whole time with one of the hardest hitters in this division, and I'm going to prove to everybody why I'm also one of the best strikers in the division. And he goes out there and does it. And if there's any way to make your claim to a UFC title shot, that's how you do it.
I watched that over and over again because you told me to watch it, but he didn't even look like he put like 20% of his body. It was a simple 1-2 out of the southpaw. And I'm looking at it, I'm like, okay, Jared has his hands up in the high guard, but it gets through and it cracks him, and it almost seems like a delayed reaction. Like it was like a whole second after, and then he goes down. Mm-hmm. Shout out to the ref who let Jared Cannonier just get his
just
face.
Die. Just
like
die.
Steve Mazzagatti. Is that you? But it's like so much power is in that left hand. So much, because he didn't even put 20%. I'm looking at it. There was no hip rotation. It was just from the pocket he threw that. Mm-hmm. threw that left. And if he's packing power like that, Lord have mercy. That is something to see. I'm excited for him. I really, really am. And I love his physique. I love his fight style. I love his attitude. Everything about Barallo. Kyle is just he's just something, man. Didn't even put 10%. I'm looking at it. It's like.
I think Barallo just outlasted him.
Yeah.
Like at the end of the day, I think it was a good fight, but like I think it was just stamina. It was like similar to Izzy, where it was just like at one point somebody starts to get tired, and then the other person, yep. you can still go. Then it's, you know, at that point the fight's over before it's over, because one of you can go and one of you can't. Yep.
Something gives eventually. But also earlier in the fight, while they were fresher, Bahio was able to rock Cannonier at one point and hurt him, and I think Cannonier survives because he gets saved by the bell. I think he's just, this whole fight was him proving, not to just the fans, but to the matchmakers, that you put me in there with anybody, I could do whatever. I could strike with them. I could grapple with them.
Yeah.
That's exactly what you need to make your claim for a UFC title shot when you're going to fight against a Dragos Du Plessis, because that's what he does. He can kind of do everything.
Fun fact, 7-fight win streak.
Yep.
7-fight win streak for Cal Barallo.
Yep. And as mentioned, the fighting nerds, the 60-something combined win streak with them, they know what they're doing over there.
Yeah.
Whatever they are doing is working.
Yes, because it is.
Sean Silva, Carlos Prates, Kyle Bahio, I can't remember the other name, totally blanking on it, but they are taking over the UFC bit by bit in each of their respective weight classes, and it's really exciting to see. So what's next for Kyle Bahio? I think it's contend. I think it's a title eliminator match.
For sure. I'm thinking, oh my God, wow. Because middleweight is, Imavov is coming off of a good win against Jared Cannonier, and he's right there. He's the guy above. You're talking about a guy who's 14-4, 6 wins by knockout with 7 first round finishes. I mean, that's also a guy that could put you away. So let's see what happens when you put two power punches there. Because I think, despite the fact that the division is so top heavy, there's not a lot of guys. The guys that are there hold a lot of weight, and they're gonna continue to rotate for just a little bit longer until guys like Barallo and Imavov break into it. So I think that's the next fight. The 4 and the 5th guy, I think they go at it.
I agree. I like that one too. But moving on, we're gonna get into the wrestling side of it now. Will Jing, this is your moment. This is what you've been waiting for. And
here we go.
Please correct me if I'm pronouncing it. Ricochet.
Ricochet, yeah.
Ricochet, yes. Debuts in AEW, made headlines as he comes in and defeats Kyle Fletcher of the Don Callis family. What do you think of his debut?
I think this is a place where Ricochet is going to thrive more than I think in WWE. It's a different style. Mm-hmm. Because in WWE, it's a lot more story-based. You got to be able to talk. And then, you also have to be able to hold your own in the ring. Don't get it twisted. But in AEW, it's a little bit of the flip-flop, and I think he kind of, with the way WWE is run, I don't know that he would have made it any higher in the WWE ranks. I think that was kind of his ceiling, and so I think this is a good change of scenery where potentially listen, as of right now, I don't know that he's world championship material just because of the fact that he can't really talk like that. So what, like, even if he went after the international championship now held by Will Ospreay, obviously, we could talk about that later. He just beat MJF. But these guys can all talk, and it's not just that they can hold their own in the ring, but they can talk, and then when they get in the ring, they can go for 30 minutes, 40 minutes, and put on these bangers. Whereas Ricochet, we haven't really ever seen him do that, you know, in all the places he's gone. So, but I am excited to see where he goes. Yeah. You know, from what I've heard, because I know people that know him, he's a great guy. You know, obviously very, very talented. So I'm looking forward to see what he does in AEW.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was gonna ask too. Is what does kind of mean for the future of these AEW events now going forward with Ricochet now in the mix?
I mean, if I'm being honest, I don't think it's a game changer exactly, because at the same time, just looking at the way the backstage things are going, it's just completely going to hell. Whatever's going on behind the scenes, and obviously the attendance is dwindling. I don't think Ricochet is not the guy that's going to save it. I don't know that there is anybody that could save it other than Tony Khan just running a better ship backstage. I don't know exactly what's going on. I'm not saying he's doing a poor job, but it seems that he just it's tough keeping everybody backstage in line. And so, I mean, Ricochet doesn't seem like this type of guy to cause problems. So, I mean, he's a nice addition. But then again, AEW also has a bunch of guys just sitting on the back burner, because, I mean, MJF said it, what was it, a year and a half, 2 years ago, where he said that Tony Khan just spending all his millions of dollars from, you know, his other endeavors to just pay ex-WWE guys and then have them sit in catering. Yeah. Like, we haven't seen Jay White do anything of note in God knows how long when he was a former IWGP heavyweight champion. So, you know, again, Ricochet's great. It's a great addition, but there's more changes that need to be prioritized.
Yeah. Yeah. And go ahead.
Yeah, I had something, because you're going to see a lot of new fighters that could potentially, like, I think Kevin Owens is probably going to be the next, like, Ricochet, 6 years in the WWE. I want to say, like, half decade, a little bit more.
Yeah.
Kevin Owens, I believe, is going to join him in the AEW. Sami Zayn, I think, is going to
make. What makes you think that Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn are leaving WWE?
I don't. But like, to join Ricochet in the AEW, I'm thinking, like, maybe, like, he currently has his storyline with Cody Rhodes for the Undisputed Championship, but he spoke about his, like, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, he's spoken about his contract, which is set to expire, if I'm not mistaken. So that's something, like, if the AEW could possibly, like, steal him away, that's just something that came into my mind, because I did have a chance to catch it.
I mean, a lot of these guys are former friends from the indie scene. So it's not completely a possibility that's ruled out. You know, Kevin Owens being a part of, I think he was a part of the Mount Rushmore team with Adam Cole and the Young Bucks. So, I mean, the door is open. And then Sami Zayn, back then known as El Generico. I mean, it's a possibility, but I think they're doing well enough, and they have, Their ceiling is definitely higher than I think Ricochet's was in WWE. I don't know that Kevin Owens is ever going to reach back to the Universal Champion status. I don't know that Sami Zayn is ever going to be what he was in NXT. But I think that they're in a spot right now where, especially because they're both intertwined somewhat in this Bloodline storyline that's going to go on for God knows how long, I don't see them leaving.
I mean, personally. But they talked about it, Kevin Owens specifically. I'm sticking with Kevin Owens. He talked about it specifically, and this is not something new. 2021, he started talking about this. Like, he's had ties to the AEW. That's why I just thought it was important to bring it up. So this is not something new. And, of course, Sami Zayn, and both were former world champions. But, like, I guess my question is to you with all of that, like, how big of a star do you think that Ricochet is going to be? Because you've had guys, he's already had detractors who said, because of the fact that he can't talk, like, it's really going to stop him from getting to that next level. But he can be the biggest guy in the AEW. There's others that are just as good as him, or he's just as good as. But in terms of potential and what they can be, he's the biggest star. Is that something you agree with?
No.
No?
No. I mean, Ricochet is, this again, this is not a diss to Ricochet.
Yeah.
One of the most athletic guys out there. But, I mean, he is where Will Ospreay was 6 years ago. and Will Ospreay has done, made vast improvements. He's no longer just a high flyer. He can strike. He can talk. He can be a heel if he needs to. Like whatever you need of Will Ospreay, who's obviously a top guy now, he does. I think Ricochet, he just needs more dimension to his game if he's going to get there. Plus, he lacks size, which is going to be a factor. Bryan Danielson, who won the world championship this past Sunday, obviously not the biggest guy, mm-hmm. but at the same time, he's still a lot bigger than Ricochet. The same way that I don't see Jungle Boy Jack Perry becoming, you know, world champion anytime soon, mm-hmm. despite the fact that he does have that match against Bryan Danielson at All Out, which I believe is next week. I think Ricochet lacks a lot to his game. Is there a potential for him to be better? Of course there is. I think that at the place where he's at now, there's so many improvements he can make. He could get there. Obviously, it's not going to be easy, but he could get there. But to say that he is the potential of somebody that's, for example, MJF, I disagree with that, just because MJF is already miles ahead of him, I think. And at the same time, MJF is younger.
Okay.
Well, moving on from that, talk about something that happened a little later and that you brought up a little bit about Ospreay beating... Sorry, blanking on it. What's the name again?
MJF?
Yeah, I have the name right here.
Right, I thought I read
the abbreviation. I was like, that can't be right. I can't believe I blanked it. Ospreay wins the match, and you saw the walkout. I mean, what do you think of that? That was pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, the whole Assassin's Creed thing, and then they had, like, Ezio's voice. I was like, oh my god, this is madness. Like,
no, it was cool.
Like, I grew up playing Assassin's Creed just to see that all come together.
Yeah.
And then MJF with his own elaborate entrance, and like the thing, I don't know if you saw, where like the flag came down, mm-hmm, and he has his own like face, it's like the 50 stars. Dope. That was like, the entrances already had me excited. And to me, I know a lot of people loved Bryan versus Swerve later on in the night, and I thought that was a great match too, definitely emotional. But I don't know, something about this match just stuck with me. I think I'm just a big fan of Ospreay style, that's part of it. But I think just in all facets, this match hit the mark.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think Ospreay now capturing, and I don't know if you saw later, Ospreay actually kind of having a little bit of an altercation between with Ricochet after the match.
Oh,
Ricochet after... are you talking about Dynamite or are you talking about All In?
I think it was All In.
I don't remember Ospreay.
It said something about Ospreay having a little bit of a tension with Ricochet after winning the match.
Interesting.
Potentially maybe setting something up for the future. I mean, I know you kind of talk about maybe him not being that championship caliber yet, but...
I don't know that I'm looking right now. Will Ospreay did call out Ricochet, but I don't think it was at All In. That is, I mean, they fought before.
Right.
It was a great match. I think at this point... they've both grown in their game, and it's going to be another great match. But I think as much as I'd like to see that match, I would like to see it after Ricochet makes those improvements that I spoke about earlier.
I got you.
Because I think right now, when they first met, they were both these young high flyers that everyone was like, this is like the future of the business. But again, from there, Ospreay, as I mentioned earlier, has made so many improvements that at this point, he's so multidimensional, and even though we can all look at him as primarily a high flyer, mm-hmm. he's, as he says himself, he's on a different level now. And I think if this match is to deliver in the way that a lot of people want it to deliver, I think that Ricochet does have to do some things to improve his game.
Unfortunately, we are running out of time here, but if I could get a very quick just kind of overall reaction to that, to the Ospreay match and him winning the title.
I mean, I think... I was really happy that he won because I didn't watch it live, so I had to watch the replay. I had so many things spoiled for me online, but that was the one thing that I didn't. So, like, I basically had, like, a live, almost, like, in-the-moment reaction to the match. I thought it was a great match, and I didn't know if he was going to really hit the Tiger Driver, but he did. Yeah. And very dangerous move. Credit for him to pull it off right. Credit to MJF for being willing to take it. But I thought it was just... from Daniel Garcia coming out when MJF tried to pull out whatever weapon that was. They didn't really elaborate on what exactly it was, but some sort of metal probably. Again, I thought it was just great storytelling, great in reaction, and probably one of my favorite matches that I've seen in a long time.
Awesome. Well, with that, that'll just about do it for today. Pound for pound, back in the studio for the rest of the school year. Guys, great episode. Great to be back with you guys. We had I was joined by Mahdi Dembele and Will Jing. I'm Zach Cordova. We had Trey Rodriguez over there behind the board. Big shout out to him. And Pound for Pound is a production of WFUV Sports.